much today and for all your work, Jay.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
We're talking today to marine biologist Wallace J. Nichols, the author of Blue Mind, The Surprising Science That Shows How Being Near, In, On, or Underwater Can Make You Happier, Healthier, More Connected, and Better at What You Do. You've been listening to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Radio Zine.
Don't let Rupert Murdoch control your newscasts. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Portland Rising Film Festival will spotlight animation, transmedia, feature-length, and short films to highlight the wide range of new media content. Films include Sid Yiddish, The Girl Who Loved Animals, The Shattered Mind, and more. There will also be workshops and presentations to educate and entertain on the art and science of filmmaking. Again, that's the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. In these programs, we present new information or new insights about old and new health issues. We consider everything from community efforts to improve and extend healthcare to all people, to environmental issues that threaten us all, and to discussions with those individuals and their ideas that can move us forward in the search for health. T.R. Reid, well-known author of The Healing of America and a former bureau chief for The Washington Post, spent 6 whirlwind days in Oregon in the last week of July advocating for universal health care. He talked with health care reform groups such as Physicians for a National Health Program, Health Care for All Oregon, and Mid-Valley Health Care Advocates, and made public talks, including to the Salem and Portland City Clubs. His geniality, humor, and message drew more than 250 people to a talk at Lynn Benton Community College. This program starts with a conversation I recorded on Saturday, July 25th, and is followed by an excerpt from his Salem talk on the failures and accomplishments of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Here, he describes one of its final provisions that allows states to run their own programs, including Colorado's proposal to achieve universal health care. My guest today is T.R. Reid. He's a former bureau chief with the Washington Post, and he's lived in many places around the world, including England and Japan, and he's compared their health care systems, which are very different. So he's in Oregon for 6 days. He talked earlier today at a noon meeting of the Salem City Club, and tonight he'll be talking at Lynn Benton Community College to a large general audience. Right now, I'm talking to him after he's been visiting with the Healthcare for All Oregon board, because they've been exchanging challenges and exchanging ideas about how a state should do this thing. Welcome, TR.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
We've been working our way around Portland and then Salem today, and we've been talking a lot about health care, because even though he is a very well-known writer and reporter for a very well-known organization, he now is working a great deal of his time writing materials, being on TV, and advocating for universal health care. And I want to just ask about that. We were talking about it earlier today. You know, this is a community station. We're talking on KBOO, and KBOO does take positions on things. Much of the media has this practice of you have to have two sides to everything, even though one may be 95% everybody understands something, but you have to have an opposition. And so I just wanted to ask you how that transition happened and what your employers thought of it when you started really being serious about studying and advocating for universal health care.
Yes, exactly right. My fellow reporters ask me this all the time, gee, you've become an advocate, because American reporters are supposed to be down the middle, right? 50% this, 50%, let the reader decide kind of thing. And I started writing about health policy and providing health care to people, and realized that all the other industrialized democracies in the world provide health care for everybody. And they just take that as a given. Of course you do that. It's a moral imperative to provide health care to everyone who needs it. And started giving speeches around the country. And I say a decent ethical democracy like ours should provide health care for everybody. A pretty basic position. And yeah, people have said, gee, you've become an advocate. And here's my view. You know, I worked for the Washington Post. The Washington Post has an education reporter, and she believes that everybody should have access to a public education. Is she an advocate? Is she taking an advocacy position? We have political reporters, and they believe that every American should be entitled to vote. Is that taking an advocacy position? And I'm now writing about health care, and I think everybody should have access to a doctor when they need it. To me, that's a given. It's not an advocacy position. It tells you something about our society, that the notion that people who are sick should have access to a doctor, how can it be controversial? It's a fact. And as a matter of fact, if you ask Americans, the Pew Trust polls on this every year. Question is, do you think anyone in your community who's sick should have access to medical care? 96% of Americans say yes, 97%. It's not a controversial question. So, yeah, people say, what are you doing as an advocate? I think I'm just saying what is clearly the case. Everybody in our country should have the right to vote. Everybody should have the right to free public education, and everybody should have the right to health care when they need it.
Well, it's interesting, because I've talked to people in Mid-Valley healthcare advocates, and they like to go out and give talks to various groups. And one of the types of groups that they've not been allowed to do is a Head Start parents group, because it's a, you know, nonprofit, and the leaders are afraid parents or somebody will object.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the problems is because of the kind of distorted state of American political debate, for many Americans, universal health care means big government socialism. They just equate those two. And of course, as you know, that's not the case. When I went around the world looking at healthcare systems, there are a lot of rich democracies that provide health care for everybody with private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. Many countries have less government involvement. They're less socialized than we are, but provide health care for everybody because they think it's a moral obligation. So the notion that universal health care equates to left-wing socialism is wrong. It doesn't have to. Just like saying universal public school, access to public schools, is some kind of lefty idea. No, it's not. It's what a decent society ought to do.
Once it's accepted, it does have to be voted for at some point because money changes hands. Then I think groups such as I'm mentioning, and there are many others, who are getting some federal money but very much afraid of doing anything or talking to their students in a serious way about some serious issues because they're afraid that they will run afoul of somebody in terms of their own funding. And of course, that's what they're really interested in. Well, you've been traveling around the state and you've been talking about your role. You're not just an advocate now, but you're actually the chair of a board. So tell us about Colorado's program.
In Colorado, we have a foundation for universal health care, and we are putting an initiative on the ballot that would set up a cooperative health insurance plan that would cover every resident of Colorado up to age 65, and then they go on Medicare. Under our plan, everybody will pay in, just like they pay for the public schools, and everybody will be covered. The reason we need this is, even with the expansion of coverage under Obamacare, we have 550,000 people in Colorado without health insurance. To me, that's wrong. Everybody who needs a doctor should have access to health care. And this is the way we've set up to do it, through our Colorado Cooperative Plan. We're putting it on the ballot. We hope to put it on the ballot in 2016, and I'm the chairman of this campaign.
So you're really in it, up to your shoulders.
More than I wanted to be. They came to me because, you know, I've written books and I've made movies about this. They said, we just want your name. You know, we just want to put your name there. I said, you can have my name, but none of my time. But it's actually taken a lot of time. 6 days in Oregon. Yeah, we ought to do this. We ought to do this. And I know we ought to do this. And if I can help do it, do it. But it's more time consuming than I had hoped.
We should mention the major book that is involved with this particular campaign, and that's The Healing of America. Part of it was put into a PBS special, Sick Around the World, and that one took T.R. Reid to many of the countries that were written about in detail in that book, and I suspect a lot of people have seen that. And then tell us about the newer one that some people, but not quite as many, have seen.
The new film, you mean? So I wrote this book, The Healing of America, and in this book I'm trying to answer the question, how come all the other industrialized democracies can provide high-quality health care for everybody and spend half as much as we do? And, I think in that book, I think I nailed it. I think I explained how they do it. And while I was working on that book, I had made a couple of movies before for PBS Frontline. And they said, gee, we could make a film about that. So we made two films in which they kind of followed me going to various countries. And so I do believe everyone should buy my book, Bobby. I think that's important. But if you don't want to buy or read the book, if you can stream this movie on pbs.org, Sick Around the World, it's the whole book in 1 hour.
Well, it isn't all the book. Well, first, I should say he categorizes different types of systems with special names. I was interested in the chapter that doesn't provide universal health care. You called the out-of-pocket system. Mm-hmm. And in that system, there aren't so many large countries, but one of them that is there with the U.S. as well is China. And that's such an interesting story. Years ago, I taught a medical anthropology class that had an international flavor. And that time, that was, 20 or more years ago, maybe 30 even, we got the little training book that barefoot doctors were using. Yes. And that was a system of kind of hierarchies. They'd trained a local cadre of people to kind of be the first responders, you might say.
Way to put it, yeah.
And then it goes on up. And tell us a little about the improvement that system made.
Well, the barefoot doctors, part of Mao's Cultural Revolution, did send somewhat trained people, not necessarily doctors, but people with some medical training to every village. And just about every village in China had somebody with medical training. And the result was really remarkable recovery rates from diseases that had always plagued them. And their life expectancy went up sharply from 44 or 45 into the late 50s or 60s because of these barefoot doctors. And it was not a pleasant program. It was forced work. It was basically, you know, it was forced work forced on people by Mao. And then when Mao died and the Chinese cadres turned against Mao for being too cruel, they ended this system and the barefoot doctors were not there anymore. And so China is really about the only country you can find where from 1970 to about 1998, the life expectancy actually decreased. They had less medical care and it decreased. And now China is trying to move towards universal coverage. And they have the money to do it, and it's going to take them a long time. They got 1.3 billion people, but they will get to universal coverage. I hope we get there before they do, but they're going to cover, provide health care for everybody.
That was very interesting to me because we taught a little bit about this hierarchical system of kind of public health, first aid type. So, but if they would find someone who needed more, they'd kick up to someone a little more trained and then yes, to a nurse yeah. and eventually... physician, and it worked well. Talking to Chinese later who came over in much larger numbers to study, a lot of them, they were kind of embarrassed. They said, well, they weren't really barefoot and so forth, but they didn't realize that, you know, we really respected that, you know, reading about the improvements. And you mentioned that, who is it from Harvard who's got a contract to help China?
Yeah, this is Dr. William Shao. He is in the School of Public Health at Harvard, and he's designed healthcare systems for about a dozen countries. He did Egypt, he did Chile, and he designed the system in Taiwan, which is one of the best healthcare systems in the world. It covers everybody, very low administrative costs, and Bill Shao designed that for, they hired Bill Shao to design it. He's in our movie, Sick Around the World. We go to look at the Taiwanese system, and Bill came over and explained it to him. He designed it. Now, the mainland Chinese, the communist government, has hired Bill Shao to get them to universal coverage, partly because they've become a wealthy society or a more wealthy society. They think they have an obligation to do this, but Bill Shao told me one of the reasons the mainland wants to do it is because Taiwan did it already, and they can't let Taiwan beat them at anything. So China is moving ahead towards universal coverage. It's a huge struggle. It's a massive country with a billion people, but they'll get there.
It's interesting how the communists also use competition. They're quite happy with competition. So just one of the many ironies. Well, I don't want to repeat all that. You've been talking so much today, and you've still got another obligation. I want to mention to people that the Salem City Club talk was videographed today. It will be on the Salem City Club website, that video. Okay. So it'll be salemcityclub.com. I don't know how soon, but people who want to hear that, and I thoroughly recommend it. It's got its funny points, too. It was great. It was great listening, and the audience was really enthralled with it. Just one more thing. One of the other attractive parts of your book was that you didn't find a perfect system. So can we get a perfect system? And just say a little bit about the goods and the bads of some of them. And T.R. Reid has had a really active day, and we're not going to continue this much longer. But, boy, he's got lots of energy. He's got lots of energy, and he's going to get out for a good walk somewhere in Central Oregon tomorrow. But just mention a little bit about you're not really looking for perfection, but you're looking for something much better.
Yeah, well, as I said, I went around the world and looked at healthcare systems that cover everybody at half our cost and try to figure out how they did it. In the book, I explained what I found, but what I didn't find is just about as interesting for Americans. So here's what I didn't find. Guess what? It's not all socialized medicine over there. Some countries do have government-run medicine, but a lot of rich democracies cover everybody with private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. Many rich countries have less government involvement than we do, but yet they cover everybody and have better statistics than we. So I didn't find that. I did not find a perfect system. every country I went to has problems, horror stories, patients left on the gurney in a hospital like that. And all countries are struggling with the cost of modern medicine. Nobody can really afford to pay. Nobody can pay for everything that modern medicine can do, including the USA. And every country is somewhat different. I mean, every country's healthcare system reflects its culture and its history. They all have to deal with the same questions, and they come up with different answers to them, I found. But the main thing I found is the other countries cover everybody because they feel a moral obligation to do so. And quite often this comes from their religious culture. Judeo-Christian countries have been taught that they have an obligation to care for the least of their brethren. And if they're not doing that when people are sick, they're not meeting the moral obligation. And as I say in the book, I just don't quite understand why the United States has never felt the moral imperative to provide health care for everybody. I don't think we've ever even had the conversation. But as I said, when you poll Americans and say, do you think anybody in your community who's sick should have access to health care? Everybody says yes to that. So Americans know it's the right thing to do. We've just never done it.
We've provided some public education for everyone, and you draw that parallel too.
Yeah. So how are we going to get there? We ought to get to universal coverage. I don't think we're going to get to it on a national level because Congress, Washington, D.C. can't do anything. They're gridlocked. So our theory is we're going to get there state by state. A few states will demonstrate that you can provide health care for everybody, and the other states will see it work and copy it. In some of the countries I went to, it started this way in one province or one region and spread. And the two states that seem to be in the van ahead are Colorado and Oregon. We are both developing plans that would provide universal health care coverage. And if we could make it work, either you or Colorado could make it work, that's great. We will demonstrate to the rest of America how to do it. Massachusetts is up to 98.5% coverage. They've done the best in getting people covered, but theirs is a very expensive plan. And Massachusetts, by most Americans, certainly my fellow Coloradans, think of it as a hopelessly left-wing paradise kind of place that doesn't apply to us. Colorado and Oregon, those are pretty ordinary American states. So if we can make it work, we can show the rest of the country. And so I always say in Colorado, if we could pass our universal health care plan in Colorado, it would be a great benefit to Colorado, but it would be a great boon to the whole United States because we'd show the country that this can be done.
We'll all do it together.
That's what we're going to do. Colorado and Oregon first. I hope we beat you to it.
That would be fine with me, too. Thank you very much.
Sure, Bobby. Okay. Thanks, Bobby.
Here we pick up the last little bit from the Salem City Club talk.
Another very important provision, important for me, important for Oregon, is Section 1332. This is really important. Section 1332 of the Affordable Care Act. This is called the State Opt-Out Clause. And this clause says if any state has a plan that covers as many people as Obamacare would, you're out. No corporate mandate, no personal mandate, no penalties, no IRS fines. You run your own program. State opt-out clause. And this has been quite important for us in Colorado. It's important for you in Oregon, too. And I think you're fortunate that I'm here today. I mean, you did have to sit through a speech by me, but I know the alternative. I know how we're going to get this done. And here's the answer. We are not going to get to universal health care coverage in our country. That's the destination. That's where we ought to get. We're not going to get to that destination on a national basis. U.S. Congress can't do it. They're gridlocked. They can't do anything big. The way we're going to get there is state by state. One or two states or five states are going to find ways to provide health care for everybody, and the other states will see it working. Some will work, some won't work. The other states will see it and adopt the successful ones. The economists call this the demonstration effect. One state tries it, if it works. And when I went around the world looking at other countries' healthcare system, there were some countries where universal coverage started in one province or one region, and the neighbors saw it
and it gradually spread to the whole country because you can see it work. This is kind of the essence of federalism. As I bet most of you know, Justice Brandeis on the Supreme Court said that federalism means that the states are laboratories for policy experimentation. The states should try stuff. And if it works, everybody can do it. If it doesn't work, fine, forget it. And if you look at American history, a lot of the major changes in US policies have started in the state. Female suffrage. All the Western states had female suffrage, including Oregon and Colorado, before the constitutional amendment. Progressive income tax started in the states and became national. Gay marriage started in two or three states. And so important changes come state by state, and here's the question, which state is going to do it? And as a matter of fact, there's an organization called Healthcare for All Oregon, HCAO. It's a fabulous organization, and they are working on this. They got a study passed in your state legislature to study the best way to cover everybody. They have a plan. I think they're working to get it on the ballot. Maybe not next year, but maybe next year. I hope next year. So Oregon's trying it, but the state that's going to beat you is Colorado. In Colorado, we have the Colorado Foundation for Universal Health Care, and I just tell you right up, I have a conflict of interest. I'm the chairman of this organization. And we're a little bit ahead of Oregon in that we have our plan written. We have written what we call it Colorado Care because it's not Obamacare. That's the whole point. We have written Colorado Care. We've gotten it through the Secretary of State. It's been approved for the ballot. It's initiative number 20. We now have to get the signatures to get on the ballot. I think we can do that. And then we're going to have to fight the insurance companies to pass it because they won't like us. Yeah. And I just give you a quick, Colorado Care is basically, we're going to set up a state-run cooperative, a board of 21 people appointed by the governor and the legislature. And they're going to run health insurance. And because it gets us out of Obamacare, we get a big fiscal boost because our cooperative plan will get all the money that now goes to subsidies for Coloradans on the exchange. And we'll get the money for the Medicaid expansion. This will help us a great deal. And then we have a payroll tax to pay for our plan, which will be for anybody up to about $300,000 a year in income, it will be cheaper than the health insurance they're paying. And for really rich people, it'll probably be more than their health insurance premium. This is our plan. We're working on it. And Oregon has a plan we're working on. Ohio is talking about it. Minnesota, they're pretty progressive people. They're talking about it. New York's legislature, it's conceivable that New York's legislature would pass such a plan. It's got good support in their legislature. But I think at the moment, Colorado and Oregon are leading the country in this effort. And here's what I have to say to you as the chairman of the Colorado Foundation for Universal Health Care. We beat you to marijuana, and we'll beat you to marijuana.
The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall and recorded with the aid of Joe Magner of Anabyte Electronics and Recording. Theme music was composed by Laurie Childers and played by Laurie Childers and Kent White.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Monday, August 10th, 2015. In local news, last night, presidential candidate Bernie Sanders spoke before a packed house at the Moda Center in Portland. More than 19,000 people attended the event, and thousands more gathered outside the arena to listen to the Democratic presidential candidate speak. The Portland event was the largest crowd for any presidential candidate for either party yet this election season. In Seattle, the day before the Portland event, activists from the Black Lives Matter movement disrupted a noontime Sanders speech. That evening, at a rally at the University of Washington attended by 15,000 people, Bernie was introduced by his new press secretary, Seymour Sanders, a young black criminal justice advocate and supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. By the next morning, the official Bernie Sanders webpage had been updated with a new issues tab labeled Racial Justice. Seymour Sanders also spoke at the Portland event, reading the names of people of color who had been recently shot by police. Bernie Sanders moves on to California for his next campaign rallies. Polls conducted a few days before the Portland rally had Bernie Sanders 5 points behind Hillary Clinton. EPA officials have greatly expanded the scope of the mine sludge spill in Colorado that turned the Animas River bright orange. Authorities have expanded this spill to more than 3 million gallons and believe it is still flowing at a rate of almost 500 gallons per minute. The toxic sludge from the abandoned mine contains large amounts of heavy metals, including arsenic, copper, lead, cadmium, and zinc. The spill occurred when the EPA officials attempted to enter the mine to pump and treat the wastewater in the mine, but instead breached a containment dam, sending the sludge into the nearby Animas River. The Animas River flows into the Colorado River, and the spill is now headed towards Lake Powell, the source of drinking water for millions of people in the southwestern United States. Dozens of communities that rely on the river for drinking water rushed to turn off pumps before mining waste could contaminate public drinking supplies. Nearby, La Plata County and the city of Durango have declared states of emergencies in order to deal with the spill. The mine, abandoned in the 1920s, has been leaking toxic sludge for decades. On the one-year anniversary of the shooting of the unarmed black man, Michael Brown, by police in Ferguson, Missouri, peaceful protests turned violent and a standoff ensued between police and the activists. Police wearing riot gear confronted the protesters and ordered them off the street and to disperse. Shortly thereafter, several shots rang out near the protests. Plainclothes police responded and shot a 19-year-old black man who remains in critical condition at a nearby hospital. Authorities say they do not know if the initial shots were unrelated gang violence or were in response to the protests. At that point, protesters confronted police and several police cars were pelted with rocks and bottles. Amy Hunter, a director for racial justice with the local YWCA, stated she believed the police provoked the protesters into turning violent. A day of civil disobedience and rallies are planned for today in Ferguson. Miriam German, a founding member of the No Nukes Northwest movement and the director of